This year, I am focused on saving and investing, but I still want to do things like travel. NerdWallet lets you compare top travel credit cards side by side to maximize your spending, some even offering 10 times points on your spending, which means you could end up with a free flight or maybe a better hotel room.
So what could future you do with smarter financial decisions? Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
I don't know about you, but I'm always looking for ways for my son to get involved and give back in our local community. That's why I'm excited to tell you about Student Visionaries of the Year, a campaign by Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, the largest nonprofit organization dedicated to creating a world without blood cancers.
Student Visionaries of the Year is a 7-week philanthropic leadership development program for high school students. Participants form strong teams and fundraise in honor of a pediatric blood cancer survivor in their local community. This program is transformative. It not only helps students develop valuable life skills like project management, communication, financial literacy, and entrepreneurship, not to mention it looks great on college applications, but most importantly, is also a chance for them to engage in meaningful work within their community and make a real impact on blood cancer patients and their families. You can learn more about Student Visionaries of the Year or even nominate a student at lls.org/students. That's lls.org/students. Hello and welcome to the Game of Thrones bonus episode.
We could not let the end of Game of Thrones pass without getting in on the conversation and talking about what we think about Game of Thrones.
Yeah, Elizabeth, you and I have talked about it incessantly. We talk about it all the time with mom and dad. Our parents are watching it. They're rewatching all of it. They have all sorts of predictions.
I think they've watched it 3 times now, if I'm not wrong.
Oh, my gosh. And we just last night watched the second to last episode, penultimate, one of the rare opportunities to use the very useful term penultimate. And Alyssa, the final episode is on your birthday. That's exciting.
I know. What a birthday gift. Yeah. Huh? I'm so excited. Someone was said, what are you doing for your birthday? I was like, watching Game of Thrones. What do you think I'm doing?
Yeah. But so, Alyssa, I have to give you credit because you have been saying for a very long time who you thought was going to end up on the Iron Throne. And I think that your prediction is being borne out by events.
Well, we'll see. I think it's going to be Sansa. I have always said it would be Sansa for a few years now.
For a few years.
Now, my prediction had always been that Sansa and Tyrion would fall in love. As soon as they got married, I felt they would end up in love. Mm-hmm. And that she would be the queen and he would be Hand of the Queen. Now, I have to say, after last night's episode, I'm doubting the Tyrion part of it.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking Arya. It might be Sansa on the throne and Arya at her side.
Yeah. Do you think that Arya is going to kill Daenerys?
I think so. I think she said she's going to kill the queen, and she meant one queen, but she's actually going to kill the other queen.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think so. I feel like she's got that look in her eyes, like, I have to do this. But it's interesting about Cersei because on the one hand, I recognize the kind of poetic ending for Jaime and Cersei dying together. But on the other hand, it felt like a real lost opportunity for Cersei to have some kind of poetic justice, a true reckoning of hers where someone had really taken her out. Because basically, she was killed they were killed in a building as it collapsed, instead of someone like looking at her in the eye and sort of saying, like, you know, whatever, there's so many people who could conceivably do that in a kind of reckoning way. So I was sad that that didn't happen. Though I did, there was something very moving in kind of Jaime and Cersei, you know, the whole, we came into this world together, we belong together, them sort of being together like that.
Yeah, although I really didn't buy Jaime's, you know, transition from Brienne to back to Cersei. Like, it just, I thought he was going to go kill Cersei.
That was how. But so a lot of people have been saying they thought it was too rushed. That, like, the whole Brienne return to Cersei, like, if it had played out over longer, it might have been more convincing.
I agree.
But see, here's the thing. Did you want them to get Brienne and Jaime to get together? Because
yes.
You did.
Yes.
Now, see, I didn't. I feel like there's all different kinds of love and that they're not often portrayed. And so I really loved the kind of love they had, just like I love Arya and the Hound. Like, I feel like they have a kind of profound connection that is sort of evades conventional description. And so I really loved that about Jaime and Brienne, that they were kind of, they'd been bound together by events and they'd come to love and appreciate each other and they'd sort of stepped up for each other in so many ways. And then I liked it. I wasn't actually rooting for them.
You weren't shipping them.
I wasn't shipping them. Eliza and Eleanor say I am not allowed to use that slang term. I cannot say shipping.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, no, they tell me things that I can and can't say, can't get away with. So I was not shipping
them. Here's my question.
What?
Well, has it borne out that in a sense, Cersei was right? Because, I mean, Daenerys turned out to be way worse than Cersei ever was, didn't she?
Oh, I don't know if she's worse. Cersei's pretty bad.
I mean, Cersei's never purposely gone out of her way to destroy millions of people in an entire city.
That's true. She blew up the Sept, but I guess that was a more,
It was targeted, at least.
It was targeted. Do you think, though, but then Daenerys was saying, I'm doing this for future generations. But no, but she really wasn't, because there was that moment. I thought that the most powerful, kind of terrifying moment was when she's sitting on Drogon. She's sitting on Drogon. There's sort of a pause. She's done strategic strafing. So she took out the scorpions. She took out the ships. Mm-hmm. She's sort of done some stuff on the outer battlements. And she's pausing, and he's landed. And it's all the frantic people saying, ring the bells, ring the bells, ring the bells. And then the bells do start to ring. And you're like, oh, my gosh, this is, like, actually going to happen. And then she very deliberately is like, you know what? I'm going to destroy the city. And you feel that there is a moment of choice. It's not like she is carried away in battle or that things get out of control. It's like she is really choosing to become this destroyer.
Yes. So I think she has made herself the worst person on Game of Thrones, I have to say. I don't buy her argument of doing that for future generations.
Right, because if she'd been doing it for future generations, she'd already achieved that. She'd already...
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Or she could have gone right to the Red Keep. I mean, we could say the obvious thing, and this is what I always say about Harry Potter. Like, if you start picking apart, like, how the magic doesn't work, you kind of ruin the fun. But it is sort of like with the dragon, you're like, why couldn't she have done some dragon work before? Like, some targeted dragon work, you know?
Yes. Now, Gretchen, here's what I want to know, having watched this penultimate episode, what do you think now about Dany's tendency? Because a lot of our listeners think she's a rebel. Mm. You have always said she's an obliger. Yeah. Do you stand by that?
I do stand by the fact that she's an obliger. I mean, look, the thing about fictional characters is they're not as consistent. Like, they do things for fictional reasons. I mean, and Dany is now in a place where she feels like everyone in her life has betrayed her. Jon Snow's betrayed her. Tyrion's betrayed her. She just executed Varys. You know, so is she, I think she's kind of escaping into a land of, you know, beyond maybe conventional, the framework. But yeah, I think she's clearly an obliger. I mean, look at her whole backstory. I mean, she did what her brother said. She ate the stallion heart. She was going, I mean, she wasn't behaving the way, look at Arya. Arya's like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. I mean, she just wouldn't, you know?
Right.
I think a real rebel is like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. They just see a different set of possibilities because they just are coming from a different place. One thing, and I think Mom pointed this out to me, or somebody pointed out, is Brienne is an upholder, which is nice because they're two kind of negative versions of an upholder with Stannis and Tywin. But like Brienne, I think, is an upholder. So that was nice to see that she's an upholder.
So you like having a good
I like having
a good nice, upholder represented.
Yes, because I'm an upholder. Yeah, and if you have no idea what we're talking about, of course, go to the quiz, quiz.gretchenrubin.com, and you will find out your own tendency and learn about the tendencies. And I did a post, and we talked about it on an episode, about the tendencies in Game of Thrones. So I will post those in the show notes if you want to go deeper into a close reading of all of the characters and their tendencies.
Gretchen, can I tell you a new theory that was presented to me yesterday about what's going to happen with Jon Snow I found interesting?
Yes.
So the theory, which I hadn't heard, is that Jon is going to end up back at the Wall, that there is going to be evidence that White Walkers still exist because they were around for 10,000 years. and that they need to rebuild the wall, and that John is going to take himself back to the wall and be the head of the wall, which I thought that would be a fitting end for John. If it's not death, I like seeing him at the wall.
See, now I thought he would like rejoin the free folk and go beyond into the true north because of what Tormund said, and then he would rejoin ghosts.
That's good.
But yeah, I didn't think about the wall, but yeah, maybe. That's interesting.
Oh, I like that idea.
Yeah. Well, don't we know that the Night King has been destroyed before? Didn't Bran say that? So maybe he does kind of come back or something. I don't know.
So that's interesting. Well, either one of those I like.
Well, you know,
I had always thought he would die because he's kind of technically already dead.
Yeah.
And the whole thing is like, you have to die.
Yeah.
You know, once your purpose is served.
Yes.
But maybe his purpose hasn't been completely served.
Oh, right.
And so he can't die yet.
Well, there was a period where I thought what was going to happen was that Dany would go back and rule on the other side of the Narrow Sea. Because remember, she said, people love me there. They look at me that way there. And I'm like, those are real people. Like, why do you have to be the ruler of these people? Because you think you have this claim to it. Well, you don't have the right claim to it. So go back to the people who actually want you to rule them and who love you and who you've already kind of ruled. So go back. And then, so then I thought, well, it could be whoever on the Iron Throne, her there, and then John could go north. But I don't think Dany now is going to come out of this alive.
I think she's beyond.
Yeah, she's beyond. Reason. Yeah, she's not going back to Marine. But so Sansa, you know what is a great moment that no one ever talks about with Sansa? I thought this was so lovely because there's a lot of people in the show asking each other for forgiveness, which I find very deeply satisfying. There's a moment where Sansa's gone to the wall and she's reunited with Jon. And she says, I've been thinking a lot about what an ass I was to you. Forgive me. And he's like, there's nothing to forgive. And she's like, forgive me.
I spent a lot of time thinking about what an ass I was to you. I wish I could change everything.
We were children.
I was awful, just admit it.
You were occasionally awful. I'm sure I can't have been great fun always sulking in the corner while the rest of you played.
Can you forgive me?
There's nothing to forgive.
Forgive me.
All right, I forgive you.
And it's like, I feel like Sansa she's acknowledged what she's done wrong. She's learned from the horrors of her past. She's taken lessons from all these people who tried to control and manipulate her. She's a good administrator. She's thinking ahead. She's looking good.
She's also a good military person.
She's a good military person.
Tactician.
And she's won over the loyalty of Arya, who's very skeptical.
Yeah. Speaking of Arya, there's also a theory that she could be pregnant, you know, with the sort of true king.
Huh?
You haven't heard that?
No. What? Oh, that'd be ice and fire. No, because Baratheon is not fire. What?
That's a theory that because he is, you know, the son of Baratheon and she could be pregnant.
Yeah, that's too far in the future. I feel like it's all going
to
work.
Well, I was thinking they'd have to cut like, you know, 20 years later.
Yeah. Cut to.
But I've heard people talk about that.
So who is your favorite character?
Oh, gosh. Well, it's Tyrion, hands down.
Ah.
From day one, I have said, if Tyrion dies, I will not watch the show.
But do you think is he getting out of the show alive? Is he getting out of the show alive? I mean, he's made it to the last episode. Is he going to, and will he exit the show alive?
I think he will be alive, yes. I really do. He is the heart of the show. Without him, to me, there is no Game of Thrones. And I need to be able to picture him like going on in life, however tortured he may be.
But there was that moment a couple episodes where it seemed like he and Sansa would kind of reunite. They were earlier married because it was like, maybe we should have stayed married. And she said it would never work because of the Dragon Queen, and which suggested she'd been thinking about it. Like, and she clearly has respect and affection for him and trusts him to a
degree.
Well,
you know, that's my hope. I always thought they would be in love, absolutely. I just don't know, after everything that's happened, if Tyrion is in that mindset right now. Like, it may be more something I imagine unfolding down the line as opposed to something that happens in the actual show, if he survives.
What did you think about him turning in Varys?
Well, it was such a Tyrion thing to do, in a sense, because I think he realized it was him or Varys.
Oh.
Once he saw that John was defending Danny and probably thinking John might go to Danny, he had to go to her first. And so it was I think he hated doing it, but he felt he had to.
Well, you know, their farewell.
To save himself.
Their farewell kind of reminded me of one of my favorite scenes, which is when Bronn comes to Tyrion, when Tyrion's in the prison cell, and Tyrion says, "Will you be my champion?" And he's like, "No." And they have this wonderful exchange. And at the end, he's like, "You know, why would I be angry at you for being a selfish, self-centered, whatever?" He's like, mm-hmm. "That's what I liked about you in the first place. Like, you felt like they were able to say goodbye to each other in this kind of way that honored who they'd been for each other and that and then Varys saying, "I hope you're right."
Yes.
In defending her, you know. It was like chilling.
That I get chills just thinking about it. What a great end for him. I mean, he really stepped up into a hero moment.
Well, I was listening to some commentary and they're like, "Oh, he's just going on with this thing about the realm and like that's just his excuse and he's always acting in his own self-interest." I'm like, "I don't get that at all. I feel like he's dedicated his whole life to that." I felt like he was a very admirable character in that way.
Yes, and I think I think both. I mean, I think he knew how to look out for himself,
yes.
but that he
yes.
saw
and
the
he was frank about
picture.
That. Yeah.
Yeah.
The ones I miss the most are Marjorie and Olenna. Boy, I love those.
Oh, my gosh.
I love those, too.
I know.
But you know one thing?
What I can't believe is that now Joffrey seems like, well, he wasn't that bad, you know, compared to others we've seen.
Oh, my gosh.
That's what keeps me from rewatching is, like, I can't stand, like, thinking about watching all these torture scenes and, like, hideous behavior again, even though I know it's so good. And in fact, mom and dad fast forward through stuff a lot of the time.
Yeah.
It's just like too awful to watch.
Yeah.
But those Joffrey scenes, oh my gosh, they were so good.
Yeah. One thing that I really love about the show and what I've really loved in these like most recent episodes is I love seeing the Stark children come together. And like when they're all together, like whether it's in the Great Hall and they're all lined up there, like when they were looking at Littlefinger, not all of them were there, but, you know, they were kind of casting judgment, coming together, or they're standing by the tree and they're conversing among themselves and secrets are being revealed. But you just feel like this powerful, this Stark family coming together. That's intensely satisfying to me in kind of a sibling way. I love seeing that.
Well, and that's why it's ultimately about the Starks and the whole thing that Ned, you know, cut off the head of the deserter in the first episode, because that's what, you know, honor is.
Yes.
Like, he's in charge, so it's his job to do it. I feel like that lesson about leadership is why the Starks ultimately have to be the ones on the throne. Unless, you know, the message is good never wins, you know.
Right.
But evil prevails.
It's a song of ice and fire. And there was that moment where Melisandre said, "I've done my part. I brought ice and fire together." So I always thought that there would somehow be some kind of symbolic ice and fire coming together, which Sansa does not represent. But maybe that could be, maybe there's some way that comes in.
Now, Gretchen, I also have to mention the coffee cup.
Yes.
You texted me about the coffee cup, you and Eliza, and I was like, "You guys, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a joke.
This is a joke. There is no way that there was a coffee cup on the table. Didn't happen. Someone photoshopped it in." And then Sarah and I fast forwarded through the episode, and sure enough, there it was. And I could not get over it.
Well, let me ask you, as a TV person, like, is that, like, how extraordinary is that? Is that like, stuff happens, like things get in, or you're like, "Oh my gosh, this is like a jaw dropper"?
Oh, that's a jaw dropper. In a show of this high profile, this much money spent on the show, I mean, millions and millions and millions every episode, and this much attention, it's probably, you know, one of the most watched seasons of anything ever. I was stunned. I was stunned.
I wonder if it's what they call attentional blindness, which is when you're so focused on one thing, you don't see other things. It's like you're worried about this lighting and this color and this piece. And so no one is kind of seeing the whole thing.
Oh, yeah, I mean, and it's like you think, well, did someone get fired for that? Of course, they're done,
yeah.
So there would be no one to fire. But I was thinking, who would you even fire? Because so many people saw that and let it go. I mean, everyone on set, anyone who did any editing on the episode, the directors, the executive producers, the post supervisor, everyone in post. The DP, I mean, every single person saw that cup and like didn't notice it.
Well, the thing I will say is that people took such delight in busting it. I'm sure they would not have done it on purpose, but it reminds me, I did a little happier called A Flawed Can Be More Perfect Than Perfection. And I'll post a link to it in the notes because it's all about this thing where it's so much fun to see someone make a mistake. And that was such a dreadful, hilarious, meme-like mistake. I mean, it really did look like a joke. That people had tremendous fun with it, even though I'm sure everyone bitterly regrets that it happened who's associated with it. It did create a lot of fun.
Although I have to say, for me as a TV producer, I don't feel that way, but I completely understand why you do.
Right, right. It just gives you chills. Like, it can happen. Yeah. Okay, so final prediction, and then we got to go figure it out.
Okay, like, prediction.
Go read more deep stuff on the internet, yeah.
Final prediction is Sansa on the throne, Arya, Hand of the Queen. How about you?
I say that too, and I think Jon's in the true north. Doing something, and we shall see.
The end is in sight, or maybe more fitting for Game of Thrones, the end is nigh.
Yes. If you love Game of Thrones as much as we do, and you want more commentary on Game of Thrones, I highly, highly, highly recommend Binge Mode. Binge Mode Harry Potter, Binge Mode Game of Thrones. Mallory Rubin and Jason Concepcion are so smart in how they talk about the action, the themes, foreshadowing, all this stuff on Game of Thrones. It's such a pleasure to listen to them talk about it.
I also recommend Coldplay's Game of Thrones, the musical. I won't even try to describe it, Gretchen. Just trust me, everybody needs to watch it.
Well, you know, our engineer Bob was just telling me about that. I have not seen it, so I'm going to run home and watch that thing
so
right away.
Good.
And then I also have to mention something which is hilarious, Jonathan Van Ness's Gay of Thrones, where he does these hilarious kind of synopses of the action, but he throws in all these pop culture references. It's kind of hard to describe what it is, but I only get like a third of the illusions because I'm just not up current enough, but it's hilarious and super, super smart. So if you just can't get enough, there's lots of great sources of more Game of Thrones commentary. And that is it for this bonus episode of Happier, Game of Thrones. What's your prediction? From the Onward Project.
If you've ever been in the market for a new home, you know home shopping can be a lot. There's so much you don't know and so much you need to know. What are the neighborhoods like? What are the schools like? Who is the agent who knows the listing or neighborhood best? And why can't all this information just be in one place?
Well, now it is on Homes.com. They've got everything you need to know about the listing itself, but even better, they've got comprehensive neighborhood guides and detailed reports about local schools. And their agent directory helps you see the agent's current listings and sales history. Homes.com collaboration tools make it easier than ever to share all this information with your family. It's a whole cul-de-sac of home shopping information all at your fingertips. Homes.com. We've done your homework.